Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Lieutenant General Douglas Robb, Director of the Defense Health Agency. So, General, would you tell us more about how you've sought to reform your governance and decision-making process within the military health system? How are you driving better driving improvements and performance?
Again, the same professional men and women that are in the Army, the Navy, and the Air Force that were doing it in their service, coming together and deciding what that end state that would best serve their service and the enterprise would look like. And what we saw was we were running the proposal. So each one of the shared services and also what the actual organizational structure for the Defense Health Agency would look like, very, very disciplined business case analysis and business process reengineering for whatever we decide we're going to do. Now, at the end of the day, someone's got to sign off and say, looks good to me, you know. Well, what we were doing is we were running this through what we call the deputies group, which is the deputy surgeons generals, okay? You got the Army, Navy, and the Air Force personnel folks getting together to decide what's the joint first solution. If it's not, then it's a service specific. I think that's going to be one of the strengths as we move forward on what I call joint first, but then the execution of our healthcare system as an enterprise as opposed to just executing it as an Army, Navy, and Air Force.
So with such a significantly large system as the military health system, what are some of the challenges, the cultural challenges you face in order to foster that jointness? What are some of the things you're facing?
You know, the challenging side is, you know, where are the boundaries? Where are the boundaries of autonomy between, you know, what ought to be, well, what I call a central entity and what ought to be service specific, you know, and those will be the normal growing pains. You know, where are those boundaries of where's the supported service versus the execution? But you know what? That governance structure is helping us work through that, you know. And I think we are well on our way in many ways. I've been pleasantly surprised at how fast we've been able to make a difference just in the short 8 months. If you look at cost savings, which at the end of the day, it's about high-quality execution of health care that's efficient, you know. But, you know, there's one of the reasons to do what we're doing was, you know, this should be a more cost-effective model. Mm-hmm. Remember I talked about looking at our shared services. We did, again, a very disciplined business case analysis and business process engineering. And we were able to come up with, and we committed $2.4 billion savings over the next 5 years. $2.4 billion. And when I say committed, that means they've already taken it. So we will deliver. So when you look across the military health system enterprise, there are six what we call larger markets where two or more services deliver healthcare. All right? And in those six markets, about 35, almost 40% of our healthcare dollars, direct healthcare dollars, are spent. At the end of the day, the mission of our military healthcare system is to have a ready medical force to support the men and women that we ask to go in harm's way. And one of the ways that we see that we can enhance what we call the currency and the competency of our healthcare providers and our healthcare team is founded in our multi-service markets. Yes. So when we talked about 40% of our healthcare that's delivered, in fact, if you add to those six multi-service markets, you add San Diego and Fort Bragg, you're getting well over 40% of the healthcare delivered in our direct care system. And so those markets are important to us. And so there's a big movement now, and again, to coordinate care, to invest resources in those markets, to recapture folks that are now currently being seen in the network, bring them into our facilities, okay, so that we get those critical cases, we get those tough cases, and that our folks, again, are as skilled as they can be. So when we ask them to be sitting in a tent again, like I said, on the border of Afghanistan or in the middle of the desert in sub-Saharan Africa, you know, this is key. And so we believe, and our studies have shown that it is cheaper for us to deliver healthcare inside our facilities. And so someone would ask, does the business model drive the readiness model, or does the readiness model drive the business model? And the answer is yes. Yes, to both.
I'd like to shift gears a little bit and talk about the way you're changing how you deliver care, and more particularly the patient-centered medical home paradigm shift. What is it? What are you doing with it? And what are the benefits associated with it?
So the patient medical centered home is a kind of a paradigm shift. You build a system around the patient mm-hmm. instead of the patient being reactive to the system or to the medical staff. I mean, that's the end state. And so you look at it from the experience of the patient. And a lot of that has to do with something as simple as continuity, seeing the same provider. You know, in the military healthcare system, sometimes that can be difficult, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't try. So what you've got is you've got those are your patients. Those are your patients, you know, and you manage them. But you also manage them as a team. And so what you're seeing a lot of these places is they're embedding inside the patient's medical center at home in these clinics. You know, they've got case managers. You know, they've got folks that are, you know, the pharmacists. You know, they've got embedded mental health right down there so that you surround that patient by a team that can best manage their care. One, it's higher quality care. But number two, it's more efficient care. And number three, at the end of the day, you know, it ought to be more cost-effective care. So that's exciting. Now, we started this journey a couple of years ago. About 90% of our primary care clinics have set up and have transferred to the patient-centered medical home model. They have what we call the NCQA recognition, mm-hmm. and they're well ahead of schedule of meeting that criteria. In fact, we're doing rather good on, again, the quality of the patient-centered medical homes that we're setting up. Now, one of the other things that's exciting about that is the opportunity for us to, you know, medicine is changing, you know, with telemedicine and telehealth, mm-hmm. but the ability now, you know, your provider may not be available with an appointment, but now we set up to where, you know, we have secure messaging where I can give you results back through secure email, where it doesn't necessarily require you to come in. With what that does, and then I say, hey, you're good to go, see you, or hey, you need to come in, whereas before you would come in, and then again, that's valuable time on that provider's schedule, but now I can put a more acute appointment in there. Now, one of the other additions to this that's going to be supporting the patient's medical home is our nurse advice line.
And with all these changes that you're leading, the ultimate mission is to procure a healthy and fit force. Part of the quadruple aim is readiness, force readiness. What are you doing in the area of lifestyle, behavior changes to make it easier for your beneficiaries to live a healthier lifestyle? And more particularly, how are you living that example?
Right. So we have several initiatives out there I think are really going to be key to us to instill that culture. Because if you don't come into military with that culture, then it's up to us to build that, as I call it, your default. And so DOD has launched what we call Operation Live Well. And that's a large set of resources that, depending on where you're, whether it's healthy eating or whether it's increased exercise, you know, or there's a lot of different things out there that support a healthy lifestyle. And one of those subcomponents of Operation Live Well is what we call the Healthy Base Initiative. So several of the bases are running pilot programs right now where they're focusing on, you know, what are the things that they can do from a base initiative. Something as simple in the dining halls, whether it's color coding, you know, foods that say, you know, green is, you know, relatively good for performance and, you know, amber not so good, you know, red probably not good at all, you know. So just little simple things like that. You know, one of the other, and you've seen it in the press lately, but this is the 50th anniversary of a Surgeon's General report on the effects of tobacco and tobacco products on the health of our nation. And so, you know, that's a challenge in the military, too. And you know, our statistics are on how many folks that smoke in uniform are a lot less than they used to be 20 years ago, 50 years ago. But they're not as low as we want them. And some would argue they're not as low as some of the places in our nation. And so, you know, we've had a focus on that, you know, looking at, you know, increasing kind of what we call smoke-free campuses. You know, the Defense Health Agency is a smoke-free campus, you know. So these are all things that we're looking at to focus on, you know, how can we best create an environment where we promote health? Because at the end of the day, we ask these folks to go in some pretty tough locations and they need to be in shape. And number two is we care about their health. Yeah. And we care about the individual, as we should. You know, obesity, it's only about 30% of the population that's even eligible to join the military because of various reasons. But of that population, there's another 30% that of that population that can't join the force because they're overweight. So, you know, that's why, you know, we're looking at one of the reasons we're concerned about families, because, you know, the biggest predictor of whether you're going to join the military is if your parents were paramilitary. So the focus on the family is important, not only, you know, for their health, but also for our nation.
How are innovations in military medicine transforming civilian health care? We will ask Lieutenant General Douglas Robb, Director of the Defense Health Agency, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.